Does this mic work? Yeah. You asked what my driving vision was. I didn't have a driving vision because I wasn't really very driven. But I did see when I succeeded Anne, although Anne actually had taken off a little earlier, and we should mention that Paul Violi was an interim director for, I think, 3 months. And but the transmission was more or less from Anne to me. And when I came in, first of all, I wanted to have a good program. I wanted to have lively, interesting readings that would inspire the poets and the readers in the audience, and also readings that I would enjoy hearing. Secondly, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't too clubbish about the lineup of poets. On the other hand, I didn't want to include boring, middle-of-the-road academic assholes. So I was very cognizant of the history of the project. I mean, I'd been around this neighborhood well before the project, and around the Le Metro Cafe that Anne mentioned, and the readings there, and the whole sort of scene in the Lower East Side here. And I thought it was a tradition that needed to be honored and nurtured and sustained. And as far as the readers went and the workshops that we offered, I wanted to make sure there was a range in various ways, some aesthetic range, of course, but also in terms of gender and of race, because race was an extremely sensitive topic at that time, and it was something I believe strongly in. I was aided in all this, and more than aided, by my colleague Maureen Owen. I think I was technically the artistic director, and Maureen was called the program coordinator. And it was sort of like president and vice president, but it really wasn't that drastic a difference. And I enjoyed sharing what pathetic power I had in this position with Maureen. And she was a wonderful person to spend the day with in an office, although at that time, the Poetry Project office would look more like a dungeon. And so it was nice to have somebody pleasant and enthusiastic and warm and friendly across the room. A little bit more about my driving vision. One thing I felt was, Anne mentioned it earlier too, was I felt that the Poetry Project needed to be organized a little better. Anne had done an unbelievable job of sustaining the Poetry Project over the years of her directorship, and she had done it on energy and verve, passion, and her ability to galvanize the energies of people around her. And that really wasn't my modus operandi. And also, I didn't think that you could always expect to have directors with Anne's charisma. And so, also, I understood that The Poetry Project had been more or less a year-to-year operation. There was never any security of funding or of the future of it. It was a very shaky thing. And I wanted to put the project on a more secure footing. That is to say, I wanted to some degree, institutionalize it, but at the same time, I didn't want anything institutional about it to linger in that institution. In other words, I wanted to create a structure that would be open and free but strong, a structure that would be both financial, administrative. So I created a kind of an advisory committee of poets in the community, and I created a friends committee, that is to say people with money or access to money, to try to help give the project a more stable foundation. Also, I wanted to find as many of the recordings, the tape recordings of past readings as I could, and try to preserve them, and catalog them, which I did with the help of Bob Holman, whom we were able to hire. He was on a CETA government grant, and so Bob came in and did that work for us, did a good job. So those were basically the things I wanted to do. I also wanted, in my heart of hearts, to organize completely crazy readings. For instance, there was one reading I was dying to do. It would be a three-poet reading. Carl Shapiro and Harvey Shapiro and David Shapiro. And there was another one that I wanted to put on, which I never could do, the two poets Harold Dull and Harold Witt. I thought it would be a nice lineup. And then I learned that somewhere out in Oregon, maybe, and you know where this person was, there was a sort of unknown poet out there in America, a young woman named Ann Waldman, who was not the same, of course, as this Ann Waldman. So I wanted to have a reading with Ann Waldman and Ann Waldman, but I think I thought better of that later. And then we had a big fire here in the church, and that proved to be a whole new set of challenges, which I think I could probably leave to someone else here, or we could answer. Isn't one of my questions later, what was the biggest trial and tribulation or something?
It was driving vision, which we got to, and then what did you do for the organization that you feel best about?
So. Well, I'll try to be brief because I know I've rambled here, but one of the things I do feel best about was holding the project together with Maureen's help after the hideous, disastrous fire here in the church, which happened about 6 months after I'd come to the job. And trying to run the program here under the physical circumstances of trying to run a program in a burnout church, which was under reconstruction the rest of the time I was the director, was extremely challenging. Furthermore, it's challenging from a fundraising perspective because we were kind of forbidden, the Poetry Project was forbidden to apply for funding from anywhere that the church itself was applying for funding. So it closed a lot of doors for us for a while. So I'm happy that I should also mention this sort of a democratization of the project in which I tried to respond to the local poetic community's desires and complaints about the project and tried to get more sort of community input into the way the project was actually structured and was run. And I wanted to do that partly because I believed in it, but I thought it would be healthy for the project. But on the other hand, I didn't want to just give away the store. In other words, I wanted to be the director. I didn't want the community telling me what to do. So it was kind of a delicate balance, but I think I've sort of managed to do that, and I'm happy that I did, and I'm happy that I was able to pass the project on to Bernadette in I think fairly decent shape. And then the 2.5 years I was the director were very trying, I must say, and both for me as a writer and as a person. And when I did finally decide I was going to do something else, it was quite a relief, I must say, because the responsibility and the burden was quite heavy, especially because of the fire, which just made life here really difficult. But fortunately, that was all a long time ago. And then, so chronologically, we're a little out of whack here, but...
You want to do musical chairs?
What's that?
We could go in chronological order. We're just going left to right now.
Okay. Eduardo?
Ed. So maybe we should have a Dana Ward, Diane Wald, and Diane Ward reading in honor of Franz.
I met the other Ann Wald, and she came to a reading here one night.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Very attractive. But I wanted to read, there was also a dog named Dana Wald.
You know what they say about following dogs and children, though.
I should say Larry Fagan always wanted me to have a reading with David Trinidad and Jamaica Kincaid. Well, I should say by the time I came around to being the director of the project, I'd done a lot of other things here. But I can say that the climate, just the political neighborhood climate by 1987 was fairly different than the mid-70s. And I think you experienced some of that. And funders, were starting to say, well, we'll give you money, but please don't depend on us. Once again, the driving vision is keeping the doors open, and the context is sort of the same. You're trying to convince people they should give money to poetry, and they're going, oh, okay, poetry's good, but, the Metropolitan Museum of Art is a lot bigger. So keeping it going and really sort of, in some sense, trying to, without giving up on the sort of the community feel of the project, try and present it to the funding world, to the publicity world, as a major cultural institution, which I don't know. I always felt that it was, and I think people here would come here like 3, 4, or 5 days a week. It was a major cultural institution. But sort of having the trappings of that, you know, letterhead, computerizing the office, eventually bringing on email, having a website, that these were all things that came along as professional developments and trying to make those work within the context of poetry and the Poetry Project. It all also became a lot more work in the 80s, I think. Why, I'm not sure. I think it has to do with... Oh, this is one of the things that was part of my driving vision. And this came into certain artistic decisions, but really seeing that the project, I wanted the project to go on, you know, forever. It was a productive organization, but also understanding that capitalism is coming to an end, and that a lot of the speed up and the amount of time and work and thank you letters and frequent contacts back and forth with people to do what was fairly, you know, what was a one telephone call transaction in the 70s, produced a lot more work. And that we were going to be doing this in an era where, you know, there was going to be a gradual, you know, winnowing of resources, where people were going to be working more hours and couldn't be here, you know, 3 and 4 nights a week. People didn't live in the neighborhood anymore. People moved out to the boroughs where they could afford to live. People coming out of school, you know, with student loans, and this was sort of later on while I was here, you know, didn't have the freedom to sort of camp out in a cheap apartment in the East Village and write. And so a lot of people then were going, you know, to university programs just to get that time to write. So the climate had changed quite a bit. And still it came down to the readings, the programs, the poetry, and the poetry stayed really interesting. And that was, I think, the point of keeping it going. And I think, you know, much like Anne, I felt, you know, proud of, and I guess all of us who have been here, like proud of keeping an unlikely concept going, which is to have a place for poetry, and poetry that, you know, was exciting to people and interesting to people and didn't have to be, it didn't have to be anything we didn't want it to be, basically. And I, you know, basically our organization, pretty much we've gotten to do what we wanted to do for all these years. And that is a really big achievement. So I'll stop there.
Eileen.
Hi. You know, it's funny. I think that because we're not doing it in chronological order, it's a little weird. But so I feel like various things that other people have said, I sort of want to jump on and sort of jump in between. But what's funny is that I felt like, in a way, I felt like part of the first generation that was sort of created by the Poetry Project. You know, like a lot of us came to New York to be here. You know, the place already existed, and there was a sense that, you know, in lieu of there being a, I actually didn't know it existed before I got here, but there was this kind of legend, I think, and so the workshops were kind of like this entree into this community and this aesthetic, and it seemed like kind of an amazing thing when I first came around that there was actually this publicly funded school of avant-garde American poetry. It just seemed like this kind of miracle, you know? And I think, you know, I think it formed a lot of our, the view of a lot of us about what an institution was, what a poet was, who this community of poets were in a very, you know, kind of almost evangelical way, and even a little anti, because like Ed said, the writing program thing was just sort of starting up. Like I got to New York in 74, and by 84, I was, you know, being a director of this place. So there was, for me, like 10 years of half that time was going to workshops and thinking about this institution and figuring out what a poet was and how to be a poet. And then, you know, and a lot of that time was thinking about, oh, if I ran this place, I'd do it right, you know, and I'd fix it and looking at, you know, and actually, you know, there's that thing about New York, particularly if you don't come from here, which is that you,